Welcome to Stirring the Pot. I'm Linda Nygaard, and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes. I hope you pull up a chair, fix yourself a cup of coffee, sit down while my guest and I have a chat about all things interesting food-wise. Today, we're going to talk with Chris Basha. Chris is Vashon's own chef, actor, teacher, director. He's been on Vashon for a few years, and his domain right now is at theater as well as at the community pub. Today, we're going to be talking about food and theater, and I'm so excited to talk to you about it, Chris. Welcome.
Well, thank you
I'm
for
so
having
glad
me.
You're here.
I'm glad I'm here, too. Thank you for having me back.
You're
I can't
welcome.
Believe you asked me back again.
Well, food and theater, it's you. Sorry, it's community radio.
That's
and I'm
right.
new at the board.
That's right. I like that, whatever that was.
Okay, so I'm excited to have you here. And I understand you have an interesting history with food and theater.
Well, I think we all do, but I do.
That it goes back a long ways from when you were a kid. And I'm sure it doesn't go back this far, but I did a little bit of research and learned that food was mentioned in Homer's Iliad.
No, I'm not that old.
No, you're not quite that old. But I just think it's really interesting that sure. The food in his literature and plays helped understand both the godlike and the uncivilized beast. Mm-hmm. And it reflected proper societal relations, maintenance of social order, that kind of stuff. In there, a cow was sacrificed, it was cut up as a ritual, and then the thigh bones were offered to the gods. And in his Iliad, he mentions black pudding and cheeses and fish.
Sure.
And so all of that was on the theater. It's also thought that Hector in the Iliad may have been the original person to give wine as a gift or a bribe.
I did not know that.
Yeah, so that goes back a long ways. And, you know, I think we should... I just wanted to tell you that because I didn't know if you knew that.
I did.
I just found it fascinating. And also that in the Trojan War... some major soldier wouldn't bring his horse because there wasn't going to be enough food.
Oh.
So that was written into the play that there wasn't enough food for the horses. So that's interesting too. And I think let's jump forward a little bit.
Okay. A little bit. Like, how about Shakespeare?
Let's talk about Shakespeare.
Well, you know, Shakespeare mentions food in all of his plays. A lot. I recall, well, you know, I was doing some research the other day after you and I had coffee, and I was like, I think I need to get online and be more specific about some Shakespearean foods. Well, there was so much information online. It was impossible. So I picked out a few of my favorite foods in Shakespeare.
Okay.
I just picked out a couple.
Yeah.
Stuff that I didn't know about. But I remember them in the play, but now in looking back, I read up on them. I'm like, oh, okay. So for instance, in Twelfth Night, mm-hmm. There's a quote that says, "Dost thou think because thou art virtuous, there shall be no more cakes and ale?"
Oh.
Toby Belch says mm-hmm. that. And so in doing some research, historians have figured out that they were actually talking about, of the time, these little small round cakes, Shrewsbury cakes is what they call them. And they often flavored them with rose petals or with lemon peel or rose water, that type of thing. So that's interesting. I've never heard of Shrewsbury cakes. Have you?
No, I haven't heard of Shrewsbury. And now I'm automatically thinking, is there a recipe? Because I'd like to find a recipe for it.
Well, you know, I was reading that somebody had... There is a cookbook about Elizabethan times cookbook, and she was saying that she had made a lot of the recipes in the cookbook,
mm-hmm.
and they tasted like bleh.
They yeah, tasted well, you know, our
bland,
food, yeah.
and they had
right.
there was no seasoning, and it was like, you know, take a slice of bread and throw some fig jam on it and call it a day. You
but
know?
There so, was no sugar in the fig jam.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Another fun thing in Shakespeare were periwinkles. Now, I've never heard the word periwinkle before.
Other than a flower.
Or Orlando in As You Like It. He talks about the periwinkles. He talks about snails, and we're thinking that they're periwinkles. But they were believed to be aphrodisiacs at the
well,
time.
What are they?
Snails.
Oh!
They're snails.
Escargot.
Escargot, what we eat today, yeah. which we were talking about the other day. I wish there was a restaurant on an island that served escargot, because as a little boy in Spain, we ate it all the time.
Mm.
garlic. And
I know, I love escargot. I don't say it also, out loud very often. But
also, periwinkles were known to cure skin ailments.
Oh, okay. Who knew? Isn't that interesting?
And another fun tidbit was, you and I had just talked about that term, the peanut gallery.
Oh, the peanut gallery.
The peanut gallery, yeah. And how in Elizabethan.
Like no comments from the peanut gallery.
No comments from the peanut gallery. Those are the poor people. We don't need to hear from them. But right. Actually, when they excavated the Rose Theater many years
ago. Where Shakespeare's plays were.
Correct. They found hazelnuts. No peanuts, but hazelnuts. So who knows where the peanut gallery
so it's a came from?
Hazelnut. At the same time, they also found what the groundlings were eating.
What did they find?
You know that when people went to see when they went to see Shakespeare plays back then, it was people brought their picnics, just like we bring popcorn now to the theater, or we purchase popcorn at the theater. They brought their own picnics, so
they found all kinds of.
Fruit seeds, watermelon seeds, and apple seeds, and orange seeds, plums, figs, elderberries, grapes. They found it all in the excavation, which I thought was interesting. It's also known that they also brought bread and cheese, nuts, and shellfish. Well, shellfish and periwinkles, by the way, were found.
Fish was a big deal.
Yeah,
that was a big deal.
Yeah, big deal. But then there was the whole food in Shakespeare itself.
On the stage. Yeah,
in the play. One of the ones that come to note for me are is Titus Andronicus. I was lucky enough to be in a production at Bennington College in Vermont. And it was the first time that in Titus Andronicus, which is one of the most violent Shakespeare plays, if not the most violent, I think there's more death per capita in that play.
In that one?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know that play. I really am not a Shakespeare scholar. I don't know much about him, but I know what I like.
There was a scene at the very, very end of the play, which really is the end of it all, because all the main characters die, including the character that I played, Saturninus. But there is this. So what happens is that Titus Andronicus, I'll cut to the chase. Titus Andronicus cooks the queen's kids into a meat pie and serves it to the queen at the final feast at the table with everybody sitting there. So then what happens? Everybody ends up killing each other. Right.
Does anybody know that this is happening?
Well, he says it. He tells them.
But no. Oh, he tells them at the table?
He tells them at the table that you're eating your own flesh.
It's not funny.
And eating became, I mean, it really ended the play. There was no one left to kill.
So this is food as revenge.
Food as revenge in Titus Andronicus. Titus kills Tamora. Saturninus kills Titus. And then Lucius finally kills Saturninus, and then there's nobody else to kill, so the play is over.
So the play's done. That's it.
Because of the meat pies.
Wow. So what else do you know have you been on stage in other plays that
First play I ever did, I was a kid. I was a student in San Francisco, and I must have been 15 or 16 studying at the American Conservatory Theater in San Francisco. And I was lucky enough to be in my very first professional production was Ah, Wilderness by Eugene O'Neill. I had a very small part. And I don't think I'd ever even been in a play before, but except for maybe in school or something like that. But here we were in the middle of this Eugene O'Neill epic play, and there was a feast on stage, and we had to eat on stage. I could barely remember my lines or my blocking.
Because you were concerned about eating?
Much less eat a feast on stage. And here I was working with all these professional actors who were eating on stage, saying their lines, getting up on cue. So I do remember that. Vividly, I remember that. Cut to many years later, a few years later, when I was in New York as a young kid visiting my father, I remember seeing, this sticks into my mind, I told you this the other day, but there was a play by Albert Inarritu called Gemini in the 70s in New York. And the commercial, it was enough for me to go and get tickets for the play, but the commercial was this big Italian feast in Philadelphia, back in the backyard.
And they're eating
spaghetti and meatballs and pastas and all this stuff. They're eating it on stage. And there was this one line that they used as their commercial, where the mom says to the little fat boy, she says, take human bites. And that, I don't know why that was the funniest thing. So I went and saw the play, and I think I saw it a couple times simply because they were eating on stage.
Well, what kind of a bite would you take if it were not human?
That's the beauty of that script.
Yeah. That's the beauty. That's but really
then,
interesting.
And then I figured out there's hardly any plays that don't revolve around food. I mean, look at some of the Broadway musicals from Oliver, Food, Glorious Food.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody knows that moment when he says, please, sir,
you want
can I
more?
Have some more?
More? You want more?
Right. And if that food scene had not happened, there would be no Oliver Twist. I mean, that's what gets him out into the world.
Right, that's right.
Right? So that. Then we talked about Sweeney Todd. We talked
and the pies.
And the best pies in London, which are made out of all the...
You know, I did not know that play when I went to it. I didn't read it. I didn't know a thing about it. And I kind of like to do that sometimes. It was years and years and years and years ago.
Right. Well, this is where we're cooking.
I was kind of shocked. It was ugly.
Oh, it's hardcore.
But it was very good.
By the way, there is a production from London now in New York. I think it's still open, but it actually takes place in a pie shop. Like they've staged the whole musical to be inside of a pie shop.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
You know, theater, the theater and food, we do our own theater when we entertain.
Sure.
You know, I mean, there's always food in theater.
We always set the
stage.
There's
always theater and food. It goes around and around, like we said earlier, but the... you set a stage when you entertain at home. You set the table, you ambiance.
You lay
mood,
out the props.
Yep, and you think about who's coming and what you might talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're always in theater, basically, really. Do you have more plays you'd like to talk about, or do you want to go into...
I could talk about plays all day.
I know you could,
day.
And I'm really curious about food and plays. And, you know, and currently, there's a play in New York called... what is it called?
You said Cake.
Cake. No, that's not the one I wanted to talk about. It's a Patty Chayefsky play.
Ah.
Oh, it's Network.
Oh, Network.
And they're doing it there. And early on, the messianic news anchor at the edge of a nervous breakdown is played by Bryan Cranston now.
Mm-hmm.
And he calls out the world's BS. I don't think I can say that. I don't think I can say that. But anyway, he has a plate of food in front of him, and he throws it and it registers and it's all over the audience and it just sounds like it's a lot of fun.
Right.
And it's Bryan Cranston.
Do you remember Hello, Dolly?
Sure.
Well, the whole second act of Hello, Dolly takes place at the elegant Harmonia Gardens.
So tell me about Harmonia Gardens.
Harmonia Gardens.
Yeah.
Well, I believe it was on 14th Street and it's fictitious Harmonia Gardens.
Yeah.
And Dolly creates this whole scene at the Harmonia Gardens to get her man, Horace Vandegelder. And it's just a huge comedy of errors, huge comedy of errors. Now, there's a little anecdotal thing I wanted to tell you about Carol Channing, who played Hello, Dolly for so many
years.
Yeah,
she did. Bless her heart.
So there's a scene where she's meant to eat dumpling after dumpling after dumpling after dumpling after plates of lobster come by, goose, all this stuff. It's all part of the choreography. Mm-hmm. And then she's got to sing and act. Well, how can one sing and act with dumpling?
A mouthful of dumplings?
So they devised a prop. That they devised a prop that made it look like a dumpling, but it was actually spun sugar, like cotton candy.
Yeah.
And they molded it so that she could eat it and it would disappear into her mouth. It would just dissolve into her mouth. Well, after years and years and years and years and years of eating spun sugar, guess what happened to Carol Channing? She developed
diabetes.
Of course. So they had to figure they had to figure something else out, and she demanded it. And apparently, now this is just folklore. I don't know if this is true, but they used these little spun tissues, like a bathroom tissue,
like a Kleenex.
Yeah,
yeah.
And they formed it into a dumpling, and she would put it in her mouth. It would dissolve in her mouth, and then she would spit it out.
Ick.
She would spit it out. So, but when you do Dolly 1,000 times like that,
well,
I guess you can't be eating spun sugar.
I read a review the other day of a play, and a woman was talking about how she hated to eat the whipped cream she had to eat during the play. And one of the scenes was that she had the can of whipped cream, which she could spray right into her mouth.
Right.
And after days and days and days and nights of doing that, she was gaining weight. And she said, even to this day, she can't stand the smell of whipped cream and she'll never have it on a dessert ever again.
Well, you know, it's funny. It is ironic that, that here I am on this island and I have pursued my passions of cooking and teaching and the theater. You know, and I'll have to tell you, when I first got to college in Vermont, I mentioned that earlier, The first play I directed was a play called Action by Sam Shepard.
Oh.
And I directed it because there was to be a Thanksgiving feast on the set. And we had to cook it. So that's interesting.
That's fabulous. Yeah. I'd like to hear more about that. Right now, I'd like to thank our sponsors. We'll be back in just a minute with Chris Basha. Thank you to our Windermere Real Estate, whose support makes our community information programming and our emergency alert service possible. You can find them on the web at WindermereVachon.com. And we'd also like to thank Vachon Theater. Voice of Vachon loves our underwriters like Vachon Theater, the island's one and only movie house since 1947, striving to have something for everyone. The Vachon Theater has expanded their offerings to include national theater, Bolshoi Ballet, and art, and an architecture series. Find out what's showing and when at VachonTheater.com. Thank you. Okay.
I love that theater.
I love that theater, too.
Oh, she does
I'm
great.
Back, we're back here at Stirring the Pot. I'm Linda Nygaard. We're talking with Mr. Basha, Mr. Chris Basha, and we're talking about a play by Sam Shepard.
Ah, yeah.
And food. Is that what you want?
I remember directing that play, Sam Shepard's Action, it was called. And I started to read it and I saw that the whole play took place around a Thanksgiving dinner, a real Thanksgiving dinner. It was part of the action of the play.
So was it prepared? It was like
real
food?
I prepared it every day. It was part of my job to go into like my dormitory commons kitchen, if we had one, I don't remember. I'd bring it. You know what? We couldn't afford turkeys. So we just went to the grocery store and got big chickens. Mm-hmm. But we did it all. I'll never forget that play.
Well, I just think that's really interesting. I mean, and you're doing that now. You're doing food and theater now.
Yeah.
You know, even when you're at the community pub, there's theater there.
Yeah, I don't know what came first, the food or
the
theater.
The theater, yeah.
Food is theater, is food.
I know. Well, back to that cooking on stage thing. Bus Stop, you know, is a wonderful play and it takes place in a diner.
Sure.
And in some productions for that, they fry bacon backstage before the audience comes in so that the whole place will smell like bacon, even though there's no bacon eaten during the play. It's ham that's eaten, but they, you know, the tantalizing smell. And they ate pie on stage and, you know, they're all around the table. And remember August Osage County?
Of course.
So at the end of that movie or play mm-hmm. well, it was a play. And then it was a movie. There's a big table scene where everything goes to hell. Mm-hmm. And in that...
The blank shit.
Yeah.
The blank hits.
Don't say that word. Anyway, and so there they had to map every single beat in that scene with who's going to pass what to whom and who's going to take what bite of what
sure.
and who's going to nod and who's going to say. So it gets kind of complicated.
Well, food not only was a character, but a director of that play.
Well, and you know, it says things in the plays about social status.
Uh-huh.
It says things about mood. The food tells us stories of the people,
sure.
you know, it's kind of a subtext as to what the play is about.
Yeah, why do you think there are so many plays like Bus Stop that take place in diners that are still popular today? I mean, there's one running right now on Broadway that's a huge hit called Waitress.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I remember seeing a play back in the early 80s in New York, Come Back to the Five and Dime, Jimmy Dean. And it also, you can't turn on the TV.
No, you can't.
These days.
Well,
without seeing, for instance, any sitcom will take place around a kitchen table or in the kitchen, or I mean, all the way back to Brady Bunch, you know.
Yeah, big kitchen scenes. But, well, I suppose it's because we're all comfortable. We love food. It's something we all have in common.
Mm-hmm.
We all eat. We all like food. We all look at food, different kinds, different places. You
right.
know, vegetarians, vegans, whatever. But we all love food,
and so
it's reflected.
Well, it hits us just as intimately as making love or mm-hmm. as sleeping or as, mm-hmm. you know, in the theater, we laugh and we cry.
That's
and
right.
And it hits us somewhere. Right. That's right. personal, right?
Well,
food.
Yeah. And I happen to be a big fan of food shows on TV. Well, let me say this. I used to be back in the days of Julia Child.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I like Ina Garten too, and that's theater.
Yeah.
And
you remind me a lot of Ina Garten, by the way.
Oh, dear.
Okay,
we'll revisit that later. So, do you watch television? Do you have any TV food things?
Oh yeah,
that you watch.
I watched all. I used to watch all those competition shows, mm-hmm. Top Chef.
I don't watch those anymore.
I used to. I don't anymore. I don't even have a TV on the island, mm-hmm. here. But you know, I think about some of the best scenes in old, like, comedy, old shows that I used to watch. When you think of I Love Lucy, mm-hmm. what are some of the iconic moments of I Love Lucy? I can think of two right off the bat. I know there are a million, but they both involve food.
Chocolate.
Obviously.
That
is one of the most classic scenes, right. ever in the chocolate factory, right. where Lucy and Ethel are scrambling to get those chocolates in.
But also stuffing them everywhere.
Yeah. And then do you remember the bread baking scene in the kitchen, in the Ricardo's kitchen?
No.
Well, they're baking bread, and the prop master, I suppose, made a loaf of bread that was probably 10 feet long. And Lucy and Ethel, they open the oven, and the bread becomes a character and attacks them. It's classic. When you think of Twin Peaks, the TV show, mm-hmm. Twin Peaks, what do we think of?
Well, we think of Pie.
Cherry Pie.
Yeah.
Every single episode.
That's true.
Every single episode, he would. And also movies. I mean, we have so many movies now.
Babette's Feast.
There are movies that are about food, mm-hmm. like Babette's Feast, or like you mentioned, Julia Child, Julie, mm-hmm. and Julia. There are Disney uses food all the time. There's Ratatouille. Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, for instance, takes place where? In a chocolate, you know. And some very beautiful movies. You mentioned Babette's Feast. I mm-hmm. personally like Alfonso Arau's Like Water for Chocolate.
Oh, yeah.
Which is one of the most beautiful movies ever made about Mexican cuisine. I loved that. The Big Night.
Goodfellas. Talk about Goodfellas.
Well, I asked around yesterday. I asked, when you think of Goodfellas, what do you think of?
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much everybody said, well, I think about cutting garlic with a razor blade in mm-hmm. prison. it's that great scene where they're in prison, all of them, and they're making their pasta sauce.
They gotta have it.
And Joe Pesci is slicing that garlic so mm-hmm. razor thin with a razor so it could melt in the pan. You know, and then there's the other scene in Goodfellas with Ray Liotta stirring the pot.
Oh, stirring the pot.
I had to throw that in.
Well, you know, Ray and I go back a long way.
Well, you know, now that we're talking about movies, I don't know how much time we have left. But I have some favorite movies, and I just off the top of my head thought I would ask you. When I say Royale with Cheese, what movie do you think I'm talking about?
I don't.
Pulp Fiction. Royale with Cheese.
Sure.
It's John Travolta. Sure. But then there's also the Big Kahuna. So another hamburger scene. But one of my favorite movies of all time revolves around food.
Which one?
Whatever Happened to Baby Jane? Whatever, Betty Davis and Joan Crawford.
Mm-hmm.
She deprives her sister of food throughout the entire movie and finally decides to serve her pet parakeet under a plate. It's awful. And then and then also a dead rat. You know, Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
I don't think about food.
Richard Dreyfuss is fascinated with the ETs up there, and he goes, he's in his kitchen, and he decides that he's going to build a mound of mashed potatoes. His kids are looking at him like he's absolutely crazy. And The Breakfast Club,
mm-hmm.
the iconic scene in Breakfast Club when they're pulling out their lunches and all that. You were talking all about socio.
Mm-hmm. Cultural things.
And they're all opening up their brown bags and having their peanut butter sandwiches. And here comes Molly Ringwald, and she daintily mm-hmm. unpacks her little bento box of sushi and her chopsticks. And
so there's a statement.
That's a statement. Yeah, there's food is a statement.
That's right.
There's also food as fetish.
Tell me about that.
Mickey Rourke and Kim Basinger in 9.5 Weeks.
Yeah.
Who can forget that scene?
You can't.
And it's a five, and it's a playful scene. Mm-hmm. And, She's a willing participant in it, and he is feeding her honey and Tabasco sauce and cough syrup.
And she's blindfolded.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, she's not blindfolded. She's just got her eyes closed. Yeah. She's not blindfolded. She keeps her eyes.
Okay.
And then if I whip out a quote here and see if you'll know what this is, I'll have what she's having.
Yeah. What's her name?
When Harry Met Sally.
Thank you.
Katz's Deli, corned beef sandwiches.
Yeah, but what's her name?
It's
Melanie. Or Griffith.
It's Meg Ryan and Billy Crystal.
Meg Ryan. There we go.
Meg Ryan and Billy Crystal and Kat Cicely.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's like the famous.
Right.
Have what she's
and that image of Tom Hanks in the movie Big, when he goes to the when he goes to the table and sees all the hors d'oeuvres and he picks up that little baby corn. What does he do? He eats it. Anyway, I could go on and on and on.
Well, you can. You're welcome to. I'm curious, too, if you have theater at the pub with food. Are you doing any of that there?
It's a great idea. You know, every time I go to the pub, or any restaurant I work in, I pretend I'm a character on a stage.
Well, I think of you as that when I go in there, because you're the kitchen's private, but it's open.
Yeah.
And you're there.
Yeah.
Performing.
I really love that aspect of the pub here.
I do too. I love that. And I love the food. The food's great too.
Yep.
So tell us a little more, Chris, about what you're up to these days.
What am I up to these days? Well, I'm really excited. I'm going to be teaching a scene study class here at the VCA, Ashland Center for the Arts, starting here in April. It's a 10-week intensive for actors of all backgrounds. Whether you're an old, whether you've been in the theater forever or whether you're just starting out, we'll be doing scene study there. I'm going to be doing an auditions class there. So I'm really excited about that.
So when you say auditions class, are you talking about come and learn how to audition?
To build confidence and how to pick the right monologue for you and how to read a cold script, sides. It's fun. It's going to be a lot of fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun. It sounds really good.
Yeah, go to the website on VCA and check it out. And there's still room for registration if you can join me. I'd love it.
That's great. Thank you. And I think, do you have anything else you'd like to add to this?
Well, I'm hungry.
You're hungry? What are you going to eat?
I don't know. I'm just, whenever I leave here, I'm starving.
I think we hit on a whole new category of ideas to talk about, really, because the food and culture thing to me is really important and fascinating, but I find food in our modern society on stage in front of people is really interesting. Now, whether or not it's actual food really made in the kitchen for on stage, or whether it's the food that's manufactured to look like food.
Sure.
Because that's fun too. I see that all over, and that's a whole new industry.
Oh yeah.
About food and making it look like it's real food on stage. It's not nearly as fun. I don't think it's as fun, but...
Well, it depends, I guess, if it's meant to be eaten.
If it's going to be eaten or not, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, thank you, Chris.
Well, thank you. I can't believe a half hour went by so quickly.
I know, it went that fast. And I have to tell the audience so that they know what we're doing here. I am not a radio person. This is a whole new deal for me. And today is my first day of operating the board all by myself. And it's pretty hard.
You're doing a great job.
But here we are, and Jeff Fletcher's here to back me up with his expertise. And I just would like to add one more thing. I want to thank Quartermaster Cottage for its support, and where the Harbor View showcases each season from the front deck. The spacious interior is always bright, and the location offers access to island activities as well as relaxing walks on the beach. You can take some picnics down by the beach if you want to. They're open year-round. Find them on the web, quartermastercottage.com. Chris, thank you a million for being here. I look forward to seeing you next time. We'll put our brains together and think about furthering this discussion. And Jeff, thank you for your help. I appreciate that. Sorry, we're figuring it out. You'll be better next week. I hope you'll join me again. Thank you for listening.
You
bye-bye.
Did great.